What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and on today's episode, Reddit's ramping up to a public debut, and former Reddit CEO Ellen Pao is watching closely. 9 years ago when she left, she wrote, "Internet trolls are winning." Today, she still has concerns.
You've got deepfakes, you've got artificial intelligence driving a lot of content. It's a different world, and I don't think it's for the better.
It's a scary place, especially for kids. Entrepreneur and dad, Sunny Kabberwal, founded Legends, an app to build confidence in our youngest internet users.
These algorithms can be powerful tools for good as well. That's why we use short-form video, we use AI assessments to actually put good content on.
Plus, an FAA audit at Boeing, leadership drama, again, at Disney, and a market warning from JPMorgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon.
He's been trying to keep the rates high the whole time. Interesting.
It's Tuesday, March 12th, 2024, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We are live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Let's talk about those concerns, though. At Boeing this morning, the FAA now saying that last week, during an audit, it found multiple instances. I'm saying multiple, as in many, in which Boeing and Spirit AeroSystems failed to comply with quality control requirements, but the agency did not provide specifics. Now a New York Times report is revealing details of those issues, citing materials from a slide presentation that it reviewed on it. The report said Boeing failed 33 of 89 audits that looked at various aspects of the production process. Spirit AeroSystems failed 7 of 13 such audits. At one point, the FAA observed mechanics at Spirit using a hotel key card to check a door seal. It also observed Spirit mechanics applying a liquid Dawn soap to a door seal as a lubricant and clean it with a wet cheesecloth. I mean, I almost think I'm on a parody show saying this aloud. When asked whether these practices were appropriate, a spokesman for Spirit told The Times that the company was, quote, reviewing all identified nonconformities for corrective action. A spokesman for Boeing saying, quote, we continue to implement immediate changes and develop a comprehensive action plan to strengthen safety and quality. And none of this is reassuring. That was my own commentary at the end, part of the quote.
I think it's hard to argue against that.
If we were there and they said, you know, you got to do a couple of things, we might come up with, you know, well, let's try some Dawn, some soap, and see whether that works.
I mean,
worked.
If we were working without any actual safety practices or standards that had been taught or
if
put on
the
line.
If they told us to try to figure it out, we would jury rig.
Yeah, because we're idiots and we haven't been trained
because
in
we don't know
stuff.
How to do it. But you try to find some things that would, and that's what we would do, but we shouldn't. I don't want to fly on a plane that I'm fixing, I don't think.
Or putting together, building.
What's cheesecloth? I don't even know what that is.
I don't know what cheesecloth. I kind of feel like I know what a cheesecloth looks like.
You strain stuff.
But nonetheless,
it's like a rag.
The point is, what is going on at this company?
Was that Spirit they were talking about, or both?
Both. The idea that you would have that many failures when the FAA actually watches you.
7 out of 13.
And what we haven't talked about.
7 out of 13 is more than half.
The Boeing whistleblower who was found dead in the middle of testifying about problems he had seen there. He was a retired safety standards manager who was complaining about everything that had happened and how safety and standards procedures had dropped dramatically, in his words. I watched a video of some of his descriptions of what was going on there. I don't know the details on it. He was found dead of what is an apparent
self-inflicted
gunshot wound. But whatever the details are surrounding his death, I will tell you the video I watched of him describing some of the problems there sound like massive, massive issues. And he says it was happening. They were cutting back on safety standards and the checks that they were doing on these things in order to get the planes out faster. Now, again, this is just testimony, but a testimony from a retired Boeing employee who would have seen a lot.
Jamie Dimon out with a new market warning, saying he wouldn't take the prospect of a U.S. recession off the table just yet. Speaking at the Australian Financial Review Business Summit, Dimon said that the world is pricing in a soft landing at like 70 to 80%, but he thinks the odds of a recession are around 65%, so that doesn't add up, and wouldn't rule out the possibility of stagflation. Dimon said economic indicators have been distorted by the pandemic and should be taken with a grain of salt. He also said the Fed should wait past June before cutting interest rates, urging the central bank to wait for more clarity. He said the Fed's credibility is at stake. What's interesting about this, you've mentioned Dimon saying how he thought the economy was going to stay hot. Well, now he's saying don't assume a soft landing, which he's in the camp that it's going to stay so hot that the Fed's going to have to go further than they'd like to.
Well, he's worried about stagflation. He thinks that's more likely than a soft landing.
But stagflation implies that inflation stays tough and you get to slow down anyway. Not that you stay hot, not that the economy stays good, but that the Fed has to do more than it wants to.
In a declining.
Right, but that's what he said the whole time. I don't think that's shifting what he was saying.
I thought he was saying that the market or that the economy is good and we should like the consumer. And it's good. I didn't know it combined with that, he's saying that's going to make the Fed's job harder and result in a recession.
And that he doesn't think they should be cutting in June so quickly. They should wait and see.
He's been trying to keep the rates high the whole time, interestingly.
I don't think he's talking his book, though.
No. I'm just saying that the perspective he's been offered is that the market has been wrong about this idea that there were going to be these cuts, right? Everybody said there were going to be cuts in February, in March, in April,
but
right? And he kept saying over and over again
that
that
they're
going to
stay so high that we don't get a soft landing, we should eventually have cuts fast because you would like to still have the soft landing.
Unless inflation hasn't gone away.
But then you have both, which is what he's worried about.
Disney turning up the heat in its proxy battle with Nelson Peltz, releasing a campaign-style video on its site, VoteDisney.com. Here's part of that ad.
What's the harm of letting activist investor Nelson Peltz or Jay Rizzullo have a seat on Disney's board? The answer is simple. If they succeed, Disney could suffer the same fate as other great companies that Peltz has previously infiltrated, such as GE and DuPont. Nelson Peltz has a long history of attacking companies to the ultimate detriment of shareholder value. His quest also seems more about vanity than a belief in Disney.
Wow. That video also criticizes Peltz's board nominee, Jay Rizzullo, saying that he is a former Disney employee who was passed over for a promotion nearly a decade ago and hasn't been employed since leaving the company. And the video calls Peltz ally Ike Perlmutter a disgruntled former employee. Yesterday, a Trion spokesperson responded to Disney's new investor presentation, calling it, in its words, long on aesthetics and excuses, full of barbs unbecoming of a company like Disney, and devoid of even a claim that the incumbent board has generated strong return for shareholders.
The bigger question I would ask is on the Nelson Peltz front is, you know, he sold shares in this company just in the past couple months. If you're an activist investor and you are trying to demonstrate to the world that you actually are committed to this company,
or to get a board seat.
You shouldn't be selling the shares in the middle of the proxy contest.
Well, how much does he have left?
Six some odd million dollars, but then he's got the Ike Perlmutter shares, which are not his. He sold about 600,000 shares, I believe.
ISS yesterday, you asked that question. I mean, is 0.001% enough to mount some type of campaign?
Well, that's what's happening here.
Right. But he's got some. He's got more than I have.
He has more than you do. This is true.
But maybe not Comcast. No, probably Comcast.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, reportedly about a week out from Reddit's IPO, Reddit's former CEO, Ellen Pao, joins us. The changes the company has made since her tenure and its strategy to cash in on its users.
It requires selling your users' data. It requires limiting the content to content that advertisers are comfortable with. It's kind of counter to the free-for-all that Reddit has been for so long.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC. This next interview is with a well-known leader in tech in Silicon Valley. We spoke with Ellen Pao. She was the Reddit CEO about 10 years ago. She stepped down from the role in 2015. Now, her departure was amid uproar from Reddit users after Pao fired an internal employee who was visible and well-liked externally in the Reddit community. Back then, Pao took to the Washington Post in an op-ed and underscored the dangers of internet trolls. She said at the time, which, remember, was 9 whole years ago, she believed the trolls were winning, but that she was rooting for humans. Pao went on to co-found a nonprofit called Project Include, which consults for tech firms on diversity and inclusion. Pao's resignation from Reddit and the power of the Reddit community back then highlight a key issue in the Reddit IPO now, the role of the Reddit community. Now, Reddit is a 19-year-old company that turned a profit in one quarter so far, last quarter. It relies largely on free labor from volunteers who love it, and it's celebrated for allowing space for many, many differing opinions. But as a public company, how much of that will change? Reddit's answer to the revenue question? Selling data to AI companies. Reddit's answer to those volunteers? Shares in the public company, reserved for users. That open discourse? Well, that's tricky. Let's get back to Andrew, Becky, and Joe.
Reddit getting closer to making its public market debut on the New York Stock Exchange, a social media company targeting a valuation close to $6.5 billion. According to a filing, Reddit and existing shareholders plan to sell 22 million shares in a range of $31 to $34 each. And joining us right now is Ellen Pao, former CEO of Reddit. She is the co-founder of the nonprofit Project Include, and she retains a stake in Reddit. And it's great to see you this morning. I think we're all trying to understand, Ellen, you know, what this IPO means, how to think about the value of this company. And you've lived inside it for quite some time and watched it for quite some time. When you think about the valuation of Reddit today, what do you think?
I think it's hard. Reddit has always been a strange company. It's always been hard to manage. It's been hard to understand its users, and it's been a very unique set of users. So they don't like advertising. They don't like being told what to do. And in a public company, there's a lot more regulation, there's a lot more control, there's a lot more limitations, and there's a lot more information shared. So I think it's going to be a very interesting IPO. I'm curious to see where the price winds up over the next few months and how they deal with moderation under a more careful lens.
You know, one of the things that the company is now touting is the prospect that revenues from AI and allowing Google and others potentially to train on the content on Reddit is going to drive growth in the future. What do you think of that?
I do think the data is very valuable. I mean, data, it shares a lot of information. It's interesting because in my time, We did not sell the data. We were very careful about the privacy of users. And there is a lot of data that people share over time that can tell who they are. And they can often share a lot of private information. So it's a different world right now. I was there, you know, a while ago, and it will be interesting to see how the users respond. It's a group that values privacy, and sharing data is a counter to that.
This company is 19 years in, so it's not a baby and it's not a startup, and yet it's still not profitable. What do you think about the path to profitability?
It's a difficult one. It requires selling your users' data. It requires limiting the content to content that advertisers are comfortable with. It's kind of counter to the free-for-all that Reddit has been for so long, and that the users have rebelled against restricting. So it's going to be a tough path. And I think that having the public market watching everything that you do is also hard. But I also think that there is something core to Reddit that is extremely powerful, where people do want to share on Reddit and people do want to see what's going on. And it is a place where you can find unfettered viewpoints. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad, but it does drive a lot of engagement.
Hey, Alan, for people who aren't familiar, I mean, you know firsthand how powerful that community can be. You resigned after being the CEO for a couple of years, after you fired a very popular employee, and some of the volunteers who run these Reddit groups shut down access, locked out something like 8 million users because they were so unhappy with it. You ended up resigning after that. You wrote something in the Washington Post at that time that just talked about how you're worried that the trolls were winning the internet. Where do you think that battle stands right now? This is almost a decade later.
Yeah, I wish people had listened to that op-ed piece, because I do think it's gotten much worse. I think it's gotten much harder to be on the internet. It's harder to be in social media. It's harder to be public. It's an area where there is less real information, where there is a lot of disinformation. There's a lot of foreign actors who are trying to influence people in the United States and beyond. It's a very it's hard. I think for children to understand like what's actually going on the internet, and now you've got deep fakes, you've got artificial intelligence driving a lot of content. It's a different world, and I don't think it's for the better.
Do you compare Reddit and Twitter? Do you put those in the same category?
I compare them. They're not the same, obviously, but it's a place where people share information, where they go for information, and where they also try to build an online profile.
What do you think should be the comp, if you will? Meaning, if you're an investor thinking about this company, what are the comparable other companies that you should put it in the same bucket with, and then start to look at the multiples, for example, that might have been assigned to those businesses that maybe should be assigned to this one?
Obviously, any online advertising company. So if you look at the parts of Facebook, the parts of Google that are tied to sharing content online, I think Twitter is a good comp. It's hard because it's not public anymore. It's hard because Reddit has always been this unique creature where it really has this mechanism that's driving a lot of usage in a way that is deep, but it's also shallow because there aren't as many users who are actively engaged. There are a lot of lurkers. It's harder to get onto Reddit. It's harder to use the product. It's harder to find content, but there is a tie where people go back.
And Ellen, we appreciate your perspective on this. Before we let you go, I wanted to also get your perspective, if you have one, on what's happening with TikTok. Do you have a view? Should this be a business that's banned in the United States?
I think it's hard to ban businesses. We know people use VPNs to get around it. I think it's an area that should be regulated. I think the U.S. companies should also be regulated. You know, recently, Elon Musk tweeted that he's moving his trust and safety group to focus only on compliance with U.S. laws. I think we need better U.S. laws if that's going to be the threshold for social media companies. So the fact that we want to get involved is important. I don't know that it's going to be successful if we try to ban TikTok. it's something that I think a lot of people are using, and a lot of people really enjoy, and I think it's going to be hard to stop it.
Do you think it should be considered a national security concern? And the reason I ask is obviously that's the pretense with which this bill is being introduced. And interestingly, yesterday when we talked to former President Trump, someone who originally said he believed it was a national security risk and actually said it was, he still thought it was, but then seemed to reverse at least his position in part because of the popularity of this. So is popularity versus national security, how do you weigh those things?
Obviously, national security is more important than popularity, but in this case, I'm not sure that that TikTok is the only company that is a national security risk. I remember Twitter had, I think reports that Twitter had people from other countries who were taking data and sharing it with foreign governments in a way that didn't feel secure nationally. I think there's a lot of foreign actors who are trying to manipulate our U.S. social media. It's not clear that actually banning TikTok is going to solve those problems, and that's the only path that we should be taking. And I think there are, I wish that there were rules just around the data and around security and privacy that apply to all of these companies that would try to limit the harm that could happen from national security risks that are at hand.
Ellen, I want to thank you for your perspective on all of it. It's fascinating. And we're going to, of course, watch the future of this Reddit IPO and over the next 24 hours, the future of TikTok. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Up next on Squawk Pod, the toll the trolls can take, both online and in person, and what one entrepreneur is doing to build confidence in middle schoolers to combat the negativity. Founder of Legends, Sunny Kaberwal, explains his strategy.
We can't ban bullies in school. We can't ban the bad guy. What we need to do is actually arm kids with skills that they need to improve. So it turns out confidence is a skill.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod from CNBC. Today with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Andrew.
Amid calls to ban TikTok in Washington, nearly one in five teenagers say they are using TikTok or YouTube, quote, almost constantly, according to Pew Research. And about four in every 10 teens and their parents say they argue over screen time on a regular basis. I can tell you this from personal experience. Our next guest is a father of three who founded an app called Legends. It aims to help kids build confidence through technology. Joining us right now is Legends founder and CEO Sunny Kaberwal, who has been on the broadcast many years ago when you had an awesome service, which I loved. I don't know if you remember. It was the handwriting service that would write the notes for you.
Oh, I do remember this.
Bond,
this
many years ago, sold it to Newell and made a small fortune at the time. But then they shut it down. And I was just saying during the commercial break that I desperately want his service back. But let's talk about Legends this morning.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So to tell us about what you're doing, because I will say, without outing my kids, there is a little bit of this going on all the time. And it's so close to it makes me so upset / sad / I don't know what I'm supposed to do about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of parents feel this way. So Legends is a platform to teach kids confidence. Our goal is we use short videos, interactive activities, and AI assessments to give kids practical tools that they can use when they run into challenging situations. Things like box breathing or reframing. I started doing it actually.
What?
Like they need tools like box breathing.
What's box?
Box breathing is meditation. How do you slow down and take it easy?
Okay. Yeah, the breathing and the, yeah.
Yeah, I think as a parent, I see a lot of the mental health issues with the young adults, and it's pretty alarming. And I think online has a big role to play in it. However, all of our kids are going to get online. And so I've spent the past 3 years talking to thousands of families and experts around what are we going to actually do about this problem? We see that there's a problem, but I don't see a lot of solutions. Turns out that the most susceptible kids are the ones who lack confidence. And right now, I think that kids are losing confidence quite quickly between the ages of 12 and 14. But confidence is a skill.
Why 12 to 14? Because that's when they're first hitting TikTok?
When there's obviously kids have always been going to middle school, but the confidence rates are declining dramatically.
Because of cyberbullying is basically bullying on steroids.
So and they can, and they're always there. Yeah, exactly. But we can't ban bullies in school. We can't ban the bad guy. What we need to do is actually arm kids with skills that they need to improve. So it turns out confidence is a skill that you can practice and improve.
How do you out-addict, effectively, the addiction, which is to say that part of the challenge is not just building people's confidence through an app like Legends or a platform, I should say, but getting kids to want to do that and use your service, effectively, rather than keep scrolling on TikTok?
Yeah, I think the thing is, we think about technology as a bad thing right now, and I think that's the biggest mistake we're going to make for the next generation. Technology is a really powerful tool, and we need to use it to help kids. So when we do things, like it turns out like some over 65% of people who use TikTok have used it to do their homework or help their kids do their homework. These algorithms can be powerful tools for good as well. That's why we use short-form video, we use AI assessments to actually put good content on. It's like back in the day, a couple of generations ago, the bad screens were TV.
Right.
Right?
My parents were trying to keep me from TV.
Yeah, they're like, TV is bad. And so when Joan Ganz Cooney decided, well, if people are going to watch TV, why don't we put something good on? Like, and so Sesame Street was a very innovative show that used research-backed activities, and they mapped it to Jim Henson and really good entertainment.
So is this an app? How does it work?
Yeah, so it's a program that you use that you can use in a mobile web app. So you can use it from any kind of phone. What we do is we send parents to do it alongside their kids to actually, because it turns out learning is best when it's done with parents and children together. So we send you a text message every day, and it gives you short form video. Everybody loves videos, as I'm sure you guys have all seen with your kids. So it's a great video about somebody they love. It could be like The Rock talking about how he dealt with not getting into the NFL and identifying his inner critic. Then you do an activity around, well, can I name my own inner critic? And that gives a kid a tool that they can actually use when they're facing a challenge. And then we assess how they're doing. So if they're not doing well, we can give them more content like that. And these kinds of personalized learning programs are going to be the future of how kids learn.
What's the age?
7 to 11, we focus on elementary school kids because it's important that we can build skills before they have issues. Right now, everything seems like an intervention. When there's an issue, let's throw somebody at it. But we need to prepare people before issues arise, and that's why we focus
on
that age.
What's the price?
At $10 a month or $70 a year.
And you're running it as a consumer B2C project.
Yeah, this is a direct-to-consumer product. I think increasingly it's very difficult. Schools haven't changed in a long time, right? But Americans, over 90% of Americans want different skills for their kids. There's a new generation. They want new skills for a new world. And I think technology is going to give a huge opportunity to add new ways to learn and new things to learn.
Sonny, I want to thank you for coming in. You've had one successful exit already. We'll see what happens to this one. And we appreciate what you're doing because I got to get my kids to actually.
Yeah. You could do it with them.
I will do it with them. Yeah. Sounds like I will. Thanks. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Maybe they'll do it with me. Maybe
that's,
I need
that's
it.
That's what I was saying. What's the upper limit for age? 46? Does it work?
You know, it's funny. I've learned so many things because we were never taught these skills when we were kids. And so, you know, we all wonder. So when you do it alongside your kids, we find that, like, most people love it because it's, like, quality time that you get to spend with your kids. That's just 5 minutes. And it's, like, an interesting video, but you can feel good about it. And you learn a lot, too, in the process.
Thanks. Thanks, Sonny.
Thank you very much.
That's the podcast for today. Thank you for tuning in, as always. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, weekday mornings on CNBC, starting at 6 Eastern. You can always get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears. if you follow Squawk Pod wherever you're listening now. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.